Hello and welcome to Volume 153 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll discuss a timberland investment conference that's available to forest owners. We'll talk about hunter safety. We'll learn about a landowner that's setting up an Airbnb on her property. And we'll discuss economic development and the forest economy in Alabama. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Our first guest is the new Economic Development Representative for the Alabama Forestry Commission. His name is Al Jones. Welcome, Al.
Thank you, Hayes, for this opportunity to speak to the AFOA membership.
Good. Well, first, can you just tell us more about your new position within the Alabama Forestry Commission?
I'd love to tell you about my new professional position here with the Alabama Forestry Commission as the agency's full-time economic development representative. Overall, this position supports the Alabama Forestry Commission economic development team. I'm working with Dan Chappelle, Assistant Forest Management Director, and Gary Faulkner, Economic Development Specialist. The position is unusual in that I will act as a liaison to the Alabama Department of Commerce and perform various business retention and expansion activities in new industry recruitment in cooperation with Alabama's allies with the ability to give full attention to wood-based businesses. The team that has been built up at AFC is in an excellent position to provide any requested support to wood-based industry across Alabama.
Now, we're familiar with Gary and Mr. Chappelle, but why is your position in particular, why has it been created?
As you and your audience are aware, forestry and the wood products industry are extremely important to Alabama's timberland owners and its overall economy. Therefore, we have the responsibility to maintain and create new timber demand opportunities for our state. Our industry is the most important economic driver for rural Alabama communities and timberland owners, and one of the most critical sectors for the state's economy overall. It is also about competing for new timber mill manufacturing operations and creating new demand to sustain our forest resources. Therefore, the Alabama State Forester decided to take the lead in maintaining wood-based economic development among our competing states by developing this position. Beyond that, it took the leadership at the legislative level to realize that making an investment in keeping forest product sector vital in Alabama is an investment that is likely to bring benefits to landowners, loggers, and the over 100,000 employees in the state who make their living either directly or indirectly through forest products. In essence, there was a gap identified where there was no single person in the state tasked with concentrating full-time on the development of forest-based industry, and we have now filled that gap.
Al, what do you see as your day-to-day workflow?
That's an interesting question. An economic developer is a jack of all trades and master of none, some people think. But as an economic developer, no 2 days are quite the same, so my duties and responsibilities will vary across the board. Primarily, my position will be the tip of the spear for facilitating new and expanding opportunities for mills by working alongside the many state professional economic development allies, such as the Alabama Department of Commerce, local utilities, local communities, and directly with the industry. However, daily routines will include such activities as participating at trade shows and conferences, building relationships with the local economic development organizations, completing the annual timber product output survey by directly visiting with 50 or so primary producers, workforce development, networking with forestry data and for public and private inquiries, among other exercises. And although I just began this position in mid-October, I'm already involved with our team on a number of new client site location identifications and evaluations of those sites for potential mill fits.
All right. Well, that sounds great, Al. Thank you a lot.
You're very welcome. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Bob Isler is the founding director of the Harley Langdell Jr. Center for Business at the University of Georgia. Throughout his career, he's played an active role in the annual Timber and Investment Conferences, which assemble experts in policy, economics, and more. So welcome, Bob.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Ace.
Is there anything happening in the timberland investment space that we need to be aware of?
Well, I think there's a lot of deals are going down. Some pretty big ones are happening right now. You know, even with interest rates not at record highs, as a lot of us who have really gray hair can remember back in the 70s. But one of the new twists in timberland investment is the interest by a lot of non-traditional investors like BlackRock or JP Morgan or Apple or Facebook or groups like that whose investors want to make sure that they're following green social principles. And that has a lot to do with the ability of trees to sequester carbon. So landowners have trees. They own those trees. They own the carbon in those trees. And a deep interest is developing in that like I haven't seen in many years. There is not a market developed for it yet. However, when you have a group like Facebook or BlackRock, or JP Morgan that's interested in investing in timberland simply because of the carbon and the green social value that they get, could be something that's really beneficial to landowners, when we do have a carbon market that gets developed.
You could probably learn a good bit about this at the Timberland Investment Conference that's held at Amelia Island every other year, that you have participated in and worked with for a long time. I noticed the price for that conference is over $1,800, but there are many landowners who attend it each time it's held. What do you think the value proposition is for that conference to landowners?
The best thing, and I have always had this philosophy, is that when you go to that kind of a meeting, Alabama Forest Owners or this kind of a meeting, at least half of your investment in going there, driving time, flying time, you know, meals, hotels, all that kind of stuff, is who you're going to meet, who you're going to renew a relationship with, who you're going to form a new relationship with. This conference we've been doing over a span of 19 years now, and it has grown into the premier timberland investment conference in the world. We have some competitors that are out there that do things like this in Europe. We've got one on the West Coast. But ours seems to have the best draw. We'll have, in normal times, over 700 people from around the world who will attend this. There's a field trip involved in it. You'll get to meet the movers and the shakers from the investment firms that handle all of the Wall Street SEC filings, to the people that actually manage that ground, and then timberland investors who are forest landowners just like me that are on a small scale. But for that amount of money, you can't buy that kind of access. And so that's what the value proposition is. Plus, if you attend all of the sessions, some people are out in the hall, you know, doing deals, but if you're in the sessions, you're also learning cutting edge information on timberland investment.
So the next one is March 8th and 9th of next year, 2023. So now's the time to register. What's the process like?
Okay, so there will be a link on the page for this radio show, and it'll take you directly to the conference link. You register there. The University of Georgia Continuing Edge Center handles our registration, so you can do it with a credit card. And also there is a link there for the hotels. We held it at the Ritz. It's our host hotel, but there are condominiums right next door. There's several other hotels on the island. My advice would be, if you're interested in going, get your hotel room first, and you can register as late as late February to get the early bird rate, and then it goes up over $2,000 for the registration.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that information very much.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.
Marisa Futral is the Hunter's Education Coordinator for the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, and we wanted to speak with her about hunter safety. Hello, Marisa.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
What are the more common types of hunting accidents that you keep track of every year?
The tree stand accidents are still easily by far the majority that we have. But the good news is those are easily fixed just by wearing your full body harness and staying connected to the tree the entire time you're off the ground. What we're seeing is more people are wearing a harness, but yet they don't connect until they actually get into position. And so most falls happen, when they're climbing up or climbing down. And so we try to encourage everybody to make sure that they connect to the tree through their lifeline the moment their feet leave the ground.
Right. Yeah.
And
that's really good advice. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say. And then also in relation to falling, 3 points of contact are very important to have. You want to have at least 2 hands and a foot or 2 feet and a hand on the stand because, in the early morning or late evening, your steps get slippery and whatnot. So always maintain 3 points of contact when you're climbing up or climbing down into or out of your stand.
You've reported recently a decrease in the number of hunting accidents. So tell us about that.
Yeah, we've continually seen a decrease of accidents. We were down to 15 in the entire hunting season last year, so we're excited about those numbers and hope they continue to decrease. But since we've been keeping track, last year was the first time we had 0 fatalities, so we're super excited about that.
Have you given any thought to what the cause is of the decrease in accidents, both the fatalities and other types of accidents?
We just think we're getting the word out a little bit more, and as more and more people take hunter education classes, in Alabama, you're grandfathered in if you're born before August 1st, 1977. So a lot of those folks never took hunter education. And as those folks are sort of aging out, we're still seeing that the majority of folks that are having accidents in Alabama have never taken a hunter education class. So as more and more people take those classes, they're very easy to take now. You can do them all online, or we still have in-person classes, so however you prefer to take them. And then I think that the students taking the classes, if they go hunting with their parents or somebody that's at an age where they don't have to have it, they're teaching their parents. Don't do that. That's not safe, So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was grandfathered in, but I took it with my son. And you take it with your grandson or granddaughter as well. It's all really useful and helpful information. I certainly learned a whole lot. So hunter education classes are an important part of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. I always tell people there's always something you can learn. Even when you think you know everything, you're going to get at least one good tidbit of information out of there. And the grandfather date's important for people to know, too, because just because your grandfather didn't hear, if you're going to Colorado, say their grandfather date's 1949. So you would still have to take hunter education to hunt in Colorado. So it's important to know the grandfather date of the state you're going to.
Sure. All right. Good. Good information, Marisa. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Our final guest is Portress Warren, who is a teacher in the Birmingham school system. She's also a landowner, and she has some interesting and innovative projects going on in her land, so we want to talk with her. Hi, Portress.
Hello.
First, tell me how you came to acquire this land and where it's located in Alabama.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. The land is located in Russell County, close to Phenix City, Auburn, and Tuskegee, Alabama. It was during the pandemic. My family and I, we were separated, and we would drive down just to hang out on the outside of my family property, which is just an area small, about 3 to 4 acres with my house, my mom's house, and my mm-hmm. brother's right next door. And we were just looking how beautiful it was and thinking that it would be nice if we could own some more property. And then so that led into a Zoom call with some more siblings and nieces and nephews. And then we were just talking, you know, someone else said it would be nice to own some more family property. And that got the wheels to going. And one of my sisters kind of like took it further than the talk. She reached out to someone that owned some land connected to my family's property already and asked her would she had she ever considered selling. And she communicated yes. So from that, the pandemic in that aspect was a blessing to our family. About four of us went in together and purchased the property in the heart of the pandemic, and we saw an opportunity that we could develop some timberland and develop a family legacy.
Wow. So that's your vision, is partly a family excuse to work together and to build something together. And what do you see as your overall vision for your land?
Yeah, the family legacy is a part of it, but part of it also that we want to give back. One of the goals that we have is to develop an outdoor classroom. I am an educator in Birmingham, and I absolutely just love the environment and the property that we've been blessed with, that we want to give back to the community that gave so much to us when we were growing up. And just to have students out there maybe 2 or 3 times a year, outdoor field trip exploration, and for them just to take advantage of that. And along with having an opportunity to develop some entertainment venue. There's a house on the property, and for about 20 years before we actually purchased the home, someone lived in it. Right after we got it, she decided that she wanted to leave. So we like, okay, we have lemon, let's make lemonade. And we came up with the idea of let's turning it into an Airbnb.
Oh, okay. So you're going to possibly move in the hospitality side of things. I mean, how did you decide to go to the route of making an Airbnb on your property?
Yeah, to be honest, we needed to generate some resources. We needed mm-hmm. to generate some funds, and it's an older house, about 60 years old, and our dream was to, like, you know, that's a solid house. We take it and turn it into a quaint, rustic getaway from the people that live in the city or maybe mm-hmm. coming to the area for other events, that this would be such an awesome opportunity just to have a retreat with their family and friends.
How far along are you in the project, and what kind of challenges have you had to overcome?
Wow, there has been many challenges, you know, living in Birmingham and having other people to come from various areas just to work on it, and not being there hands-on all the time has been a challenge, just getting someone to follow suit in what they communicate that they would do. But we've acquired some skills that we thought that we didn't even know that we had. So it's been developing a new skill set for us also as we've been taking on this journey. And just to distribute the responsibility of family members doing different things too, and learning that we all have different skill sets too, and that we've just been taking our skill sets to a whole nother level.
What do you think goes into making a successful Airbnb? I mean, what are the kind of things that people who might be interested in this should be thinking about if they consider their property in the same way that yours is?
Yeah, I think it's just to look at your property and to see what if. I think one of the things that we did, we wanted to create an atmosphere of a home away from home. That someone could literally come in and feel the comfort of their own home and to know that someone is preparing it for them as if they're preparing it for their own family, but just to look to see the possibility and not to say what you can't do, because again, we have never done this. First time land owners to this extent, but you know, we've been blessed with it, and there have been many challenges, but the rewards thus far has far outweighed the challenges of just creating something. Actually, like I said, having lemon and creating lemonade, and that I know that it's going to be a wonderful getaway for someone, for people as we continue to work. And our goal is to have it operational by the end of the year.
Okay. Well, thank you, Portress. Thanks for sharing your experiences. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this issue. Our thanks go to Al Jones, Bob Isler, Marisa Futral, and Portress Warren. Owning a forest and trying to make a profit from it is actually a complicated project. You could spend your money in other ways. You could, say, buy a rental house. That's a common type of investment. It has its advantages and disadvantages, but something it doesn't require is a 30-year time horizon in order to see any substantial income. Timberland investment does require that long-term horizon and patience. Its income is not always annual in any meaningful sense. And while it's possible to get in and out of the investment, it really shouldn't be your main goal. It's a buy and hold thing. And that's why understanding economic development, attending conferences about timberland investments, keeping up with the possibilities of making money on an annual basis are so important. All of our guests today have helped contribute to these essential topics. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.